Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the snow is up to our navels. We're still shoveling it out. So why don't we do a gardening show? Perfect. Joining us, it's the dream team of gardeners. Horticulturalist Bob Graves is here, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. We welcome your calls. You know, eventually it will actually be spring, and we will actually be gardening. Not today. It depends on how ambitious you are. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And you can email the program, voxpopwamc.org. We will be right back and start the show right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions, yeah, it's the dream team. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's also been an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for 40 years. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. I have a feeling it will be a popular show. It always is. The email address is voxpopwamc.org. But again, that number, 800-348-2551. Gentlemen, welcome back.
It's great to be
back. Good to be here.
It is.
Doesn't really feel like gardening weather, though, does it?
It's kind of hard to climb over the snowbanks to get here.
It certainly was. Yeah.
Actually, in the studio, it feels like gardening weather.
It's pretty warm
here.
It's
111 degrees in here, but we'll work on that, or else we'll all nod off during the show.
Exactly.
Now, when I was walking out to take the air, Fred, prior to the program, you were talking to some people in the audience, in the office, front office, and said, yeah, all this snow. You think it's a bad thing, but it's a good thing.
It is a good thing. And when we're talking plants in particular and the environment, all the snow, if you think of like the old winters, how we always had a lot of snowpack, and then that snow sort of gradually melts as spring comes on, that's really, really key for plants, because in the last few years, we've been having these really pretty excessive spring droughts.
Right.
And this is actually going to be a good for us to play.
Also good that it moderates the soil temperature so that the ground doesn't freeze and thaw.
That's
change
right.
Temperature.
Oh, that
rapidly.
Makes a great point too.
Yep. Yeah. So if it does fluctuate, really it's going to protect it, and it's going to hopefully give us a quite a long.
So there is
help
some
break
good,
up those
some good that
droughts.
Comes from.
Because I'm not having. I'm still sore
you're
from shoveling.
Fun
I'm not feeling really all that positive.
But there is some good involved. With
okay.
This.
Yeah, last year, you know, we had this exceptionally warm winter and then very warm March, and so we were sort of on schedule for that to happen again. But the this snow has sort of kind of stifled that, just stopped all that. So we should go into, I would say, an average spring.
Yeah, it actually kind of equalized things out, because we were heading, as Greg said, ahead of schedule with the way things were going. Buds were starting to pop.
Yeah, my
buds
maple tree has some buds. They weren't popping,
really,
but they're starting to appear.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost
not popping, but they're really starting to swell.
Record, right?
The lilacs, I noticed, were really, really big. And that's scary, because what's the odds of getting another cold blunt between here and the spring really gets here? Well, it's pretty good. So we needed to kind of slow things down a little bit, and I think this is actually going to do that, especially when you look at ahead, you've got several days, a week or so of cool temperatures.
As well.
And speaking of things that are just about to happen, I brought in just for your entertainment, Ray.
It's a yellow thing.
Yes, branch of forsythia.
forsythia,
and
of course.
And I brought that in, not that we did this one that way, but if you go out to your yard, if you have some forsythia, and you cut it today, as long as it didn't get too cold, and my feeling is it may not have, we may still be okay with that, but you'll know for sure. It'll take about 4 or 5 days now, and it'll be in bloom.
You're kidding me.
It'll happen very quickly.
Very quick.
You can force them inside.
Yeah. Because they're ready to go anyways. They want to go.
Cut some branches, put them in some water, room temperature, or in this room, maybe about day and a half,
maybe less.
Okay, you know, maybe if somebody's listening in the newsroom, and they're probably nodding off too, but you know, if you could just turn the heat down a little bit, we'd hey, let's take a call. 800-348-2551. Mark in Salem. Mark, you're first.
Hi, Ray. The walk outside, I suspect, is for another reason.
you're on to me, eh?
I'm the same way. I have two apple orchards. I have one that I planted more recently, and last year and the year before, I had so many apples that one of the trees actually fell over. It was so heavily laden. the older apple orchard is probably close to 100 years old. And we have had, up until the last 10 years or so, we've had enormous crops of apples. And then suddenly it all stopped. Now, we have honeybees stored on the property by a friend, and he uses it in his commercial operation. And I was told by a PhD biologist, botanist, that we have alkaline soil, that boron was a key element that would be leached out of the soil and would prevent the blossoms from turning into true apples. Is that something, she recommended 20 mule team borax spread around the tree. Now, we did that once, and the tree was very green, and it produced a few more apples, but nothing spectacular. And it happened all at once. Could you comment on that, please?
Boron.
Well, I would not apply boron around the trees unless you do get a soil test, and it does, in fact, show that element is missing completely. So I wouldn't certainly do it just thinking that it might work.
How much boron do you need in your soil?
Very, very small trace amounts.
And boron...
Yeah, she said it would be a very small amount. So yeah. We put like a cup full around each tree and dug it into the ground with a tined pitchfork, and those trees seemed to be healthier that year, so, but they still didn't produce too much.
So the flower buds are set the previous year. So as we come into 2017 spring, the flower buds were determined last year in July and August.
And we always have a good flower bud, but we don't always develop apples.
So then
I'm trying to.
So if you're getting a lot of flowers and the flowers are opening and the weather is mild, then pollination, the bees and other pollinators can get in there and do their job. If they flower quickly or we have a frost or you have a lot of rain, you get less pollination.
But I always thought it was an every other year thing with apples.
No, you also see bumper crops a lot of times fluctuate, like every 1 year heavy set,
but
another year is a lighter set.
Well, this has been going on now for this particular orchard. There's 20 or 25 trees. And we've been pruning them back, and they just suddenly stopped producing.
Yep. When are you pruning? What time of year are you pruning?
Well, we pruned after the cold weather set in the fall. We're doing a little pruning, minor pruning now.
Yeah, this is a good...
take off some of the blooms, I realize.
Yeah, you're going to want to always prune apples like end of February is a really good time, very early part of March.
That's what
we've been
doing up to
recently.
It's still
not too late, but you want to, generally end of February is a really good time, especially with anything that's a mature tree. If you're talking about training young fruit trees and getting structure, there are most orchards will actually prune late February, but they'll also prune a little bit in the summer to help shape things too. But on the mature trees, it's predominantly end of February, other than suckers and sprouts.
Okay.
So you could try a complete fertilizer.
If you're getting flowers, though,
on all of those,
then it's about pollination.
It's pollination.
It sure is.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
And why you're not getting pollination, if you have bees in your smaller trees, your younger trees are getting pollinated, then it may be about those older trees have a specific pollinator. They need another tree around, and it's possible one of your older trees was it, and it's failed and disappeared. I mean, I'm grasping here.
All right, let's go over to Angelique in Skodak. Angelique, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I recently bought my first house, and I have about a half an acre of rambling meadow at the back of my property. The previous owner told me that he just bushwhacks it about every other year, but I'm kind of lazy and I don't want to have to do that.
Good for you.
And so I'm wondering, what can I do with that land to keep it from turning into impassable or eventually becoming woods? And is it possible for me to convert it somehow without major, major effort to yard or even garden?
Oh, it's all about mowing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. You really want to just make sure you brush hog that field.
That's going to be the easiest thing is to brush hog it, and hopefully more than once a year.
Yeah, ideally, if you're trying to get rid of woody plants, if you can brush hog it, at least once a year, that theoretically will get rid of most of them. If you can brush hog it a couple of times a year, that's even better. If you're worried about ground nesting birds, typically late fall is a good time, very late fall.
Or early spring.
Or very early spring.
Yeah, and if you want to make it yard, then you know the brush hog is going to be necessary the first couple of times. But once you get it raked or cut down a few times and it's low enough, you can run it over with your mower eventually turn it into yard without
You know, you have to think about what they do alongside the roadways. The easiest, simplest way to keep things from turning into shrubs and trees is to keep it mowed.
Yeah.
And if there were an easier way along the highways, they'd do it. But there isn't.
But, yeah, that would definitely be easy. You know, and another thing I've done in areas at the Arboretum where we've actually done some reclamation work like this, we will go out through there. If you see woody plants, it might be worthwhile to look, you know, get somebody that's knowledgeable, look for some key woody plants in certain areas and actually strategically leave those, because I don't think you just want a barren field. So you may end up getting a real nice mix of some really nice natives in there without having to buy a plant or even put any in the ground. You've got them. So just kind of use some flagging tape on a handful of different things, and then let's, you know, either hire someone to just brush hog it. It's relatively inexpensive. It's very quick.
Okay.
And it will get rid of all woodies and give you all herbaceous plants.
It is the Vox Pop Gardening Show. Thanks, Angelique, for that one. We'll take a break here at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Comes from Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York. PreserveNYS.org. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, RealSeafoodCo.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, dairy and no moo dairy free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
You guys know who that trombone player is, right?
I do like it.
Yeah, it's Frank Rosolino. Yeah, you knew that.
It's really
Fred
good.
Knew that.
Really good. Oh, yeah.
Our number is 800-348-2551, the Gardening Show on a post-winter storm edition here. And I know there are some things going on at Fatigan's and at Ward's and Atlantis Arboretum, and we'll take some news updates from each. We'll start with Fred over at the Atlantis Arboretum.
All right. Well, last time I was on the air, I think it was in January there, we mentioned a little teaser of a great oak tree hunt that
we're
going to be sponsoring and hosting this year. And I just wanted to give a quick update on that. We are officially launching the Great Oak Tree Hunt at Atlantis Arboretum.
It's exciting.
This spring, April 1st, will be the day that it's open. And all the information will be on our website. You can certainly go there. Guidelines and nomination forms will all be posted. And we will be giving prizes, not only just for trees that are in our county. There's a bunch of different counties that we're going to be looking at, everything surrounding Landis. Plus, we're also looking for any state champions. It doesn't matter where they are in New York. And even if it's in Massachusetts, if we find some new state champions, we're interested in them too. So even if you don't live in the parameters for the counties that we're looking for, if you live in a state, hey, everyone does, look at the websites for those measurements and what we're looking for.
Now, you're not supposed to shoot the male trees, though, right?
Oh boy, no, we don't actually hurt anything. We use lasers to measure them.
Oh,
so we
I
do
see.
Shoot,
oh,
we
so
do shoot
it's
them
not that
with,
kind of a hunt
with a laser. And all we're doing is, you know, a few folks may give the tree a big hug while they're there, but otherwise.
So don't harm the tree.
We're not hurting our tree at all. No, we're just wanting
Find
to document
the tree.
Them. And it doesn't matter if it's on private land or public land. And, you know, it's sort of the first nomination form in is going to be the first one. So as many people know of an old oak.
Yeah.
Well, the first form in is going to be the first official one. You can't send them in before April 1st.
Okay, so fair enough. And we can find out more how?
LandisArboretum.org.
All right.
And also, we have a Facebook page for this Big Trees. It's going to be facebook.com/ancient forests, and that's with an S, forests. And also, there's a Big Tree Hunters group on Facebook as well. So feel free to find us on Facebook, join our Big Tree Hunters group, look at the Landis website for your one-stop shop for everything to do with the Great Oak Hunt of Landis Arboretum.
All right.
2017.
All right. Well, the show's over. So nice having you guys here.
And nice
No. There's plenty of time. Actually, what we'll do is after the next break, we'll do the Fatigans and Ward's
we'll make it short.
Sounds
updates.
Great.
Okay. So, because we have a lot of calls here. And don't forget about the Oak Hunt. It is. You can find out more at the Landis Arboretum website.
That's right. April 1st through October 1st.
And no trees will be harmed.
No harm
during
to
this
any
hunt
trees?
At all.
Nope. In fact, we're probably going to help a lot of trees
right.
in the process.
Fair enough. And over to David in Johnstown. David, you're on.
Okay. I don't know whether I should pull my blackberries. 2 years ago, I planted them. I have a good crop. Last year, not a berry came up. Do you think there's something wrong with them, maybe? Or was it the weather?
You mean they
Or
didn't...
are they... semi-annual.
They didn't sprout? That no growth
well,
came?
Well, they didn't have any berries.
They didn't have any flowers.
Did you do anything different?
No.
Cutting them at different times?
No, I don't know. Seriously, I'm ignorant.
So the basic cycle, you know, is that the shoots that come out of the ground this spring are not going to flower until next year.
Oh.
And the pretty much all blackberries, raspberries, you got some choices there. And so the shoots that came up last year would be the ones that set flowers this spring. And usually you just shorten them a little bit. You take a foot or so off the top so that you have this 2 or 3 foot cane that then branches, flowers, produces fruit.
Oh.
The ones that did that last year are brown and dead, and those you clean out this spring.
Yeah, it's about pruning on these.
So when would you prune them?
Oh, really? Okay.
As soon as the snow melts, it's good.
Yeah. As soon as the snow melts, get out there and take a foot or two off there, David.
Yeah, but take the tops off and cut out anything that's brown and dead, which is pretty obvious.
Yeah, but if you do cut the live ones, you're taking fruit away. So you want to just head them back, as Greg said.
Almost all brambles you have to take
So don't pull the whole thing, the yard.
No, I would just go for the old dead stuff.
And then give us a call back in June and see if they have flowers on them.
That would be great. David, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's The Gardening Show. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward are here. And Michael in Poughkeepsie is next. Michael.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a rather large cottonwood tree that's probably close to 100 feet tall that got struck by lightning 18 months ago, and as a result, it lost about half its branches and affected about a quarter of the bark all the way down the one side of the trunk. And I was wondering, what are the chances of it still surviving?
You know, in the past, and over the years, I've seen trees hit by lightning. Do you know if the lightning scar or strike, did it go all the way to the roots? I'm assuming it did if you're seeing dead branches, so you kind of see it right to the ground.
I mean, on one side of the trunk, it blew the bark off.
And it touches
the
ground?
All the way down.
Yeah. So what it did is it grounded itself out in the root system, and that when those kind of lightning strikes happen, they're more detrimental to a tree as opposed to one just hitting the bark and not grounding itself out into the root system. So you're seeing corresponding decline based on dead roots, the damaged roots by the lightning strike. Now, there's usually a 3-year window that we look for with lightning strikes. So after 3 years, you typically have seen most of the damage you're going to see from that lightning strike in place. So I don't think that the damage is done. If it's 18 months ago, my guess is you're going to continue to see more. Some trees have actually come back and done quite well. They hit a stabilization point, and whatever you have green up there is going to continue. Others are definitely takedowns. So I guess monitor it, and if it's in proximity to potentially a building, like a home, then I would get an arborist in there.
You said
to
it was a cottonwood, right?
Yeah, because that's going to be a weaker tree.
That's
to begin
a weak
with.
Tree to begin with.
Yep.
My inclination is to cut them down sooner than later.
But if the tree is, you know, certainly something you want to try to preserve and keep, a consult with a certified arborist would be a good thing to
that's
do.
That's a great, Michael.
And we do have a link on our website as well for that. It's treesaregoodibelieve.com, but the landisarboretum.org website has the link for that. And
we had a couple in our backyard got struck about 10 years ago. I think they were oaks.
Okay.
And they were huge. Caught on fire. It was such a good strike. The neighbor said, oh, yeah, the top of your tree was on fire.
Wow.
Anyway, they had to go.
Yeah. I've seen a larch at the arboretum get hit. It was striked right down to the roots. The first year, almost no damage at all, which was unsurprising. It took the third year before the decline really set in, and it was completely dead by the end of the third year.
Amazing.
So
over to Pam in Cherry Valley. Hello, Pam.
Hi there. Hello. I love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I have two questions, and I'm driving, so I'm going to hang up and take the answers online.
Okay,
the first one is I have a relatively healthy maple, but I noticed that one of the branches is missing all of its bark, and I'm wondering if that's a danger since it's above a sitting area.
Okay.
And then my other question is I'm really intrigued by straw bale gardening, and I want to start that this spring, and I'm wondering if you could give me guidelines on preparation and maintenance.
Okay, Pam, so you'll hang up, and they'll answer the question?
Yes.
Okie doke. Drive safely. Thank you very much. All right. Go ahead, guys.
Well, the dead limb is the easy one. But I think they're both pretty easy. But the dead limb should, it's a hazard. We're not going to tell you not to cut it down.
Yeah.
That said, the woodpeckers
would
like it.
Interesting as to why is that foretelling future decline in that
possible
tree?
And we don't know how big the tree is.
It's a big tree. They're going to sort of self-limb a little bit.
Yeah, they will. Dieback from the bottom up on a big tree is somewhat normal. It is normal. Dieback on the top down is bad. It's not good. So I'm assuming based on what she said, it sounds like it's just occasional dead limb.
Just
cut it. But you want to make sure you are making a good pruning cut when you take that branch off. You want to cut back to the collar. You don't want to leave a stub. You don't want to cut the collar off. If you're wondering what I'm talking about when I say branch collar, then there is a link on our website to a site called Trees Are Good. And you can click that link. It'll give you pruning diagrams. And those are all facts, not opinions on how things should be done.
Now, what about the straw bale gardening?
I have never actually performed it myself, only because I don't know what to do afterwards.
What is it?
Well, you take a straw bale, you actually plant in it. You can start that by adding soil to the bale first, and it essentially creates a raised bed without having to do any work.
Have
this thing. It provides drainage. So, it holds moisture. It's like a rotted tree trunk.
Yeah, the first thing I would say is you have to find some straw bales. And they can be hay as well. So you would need those bales. You need a sunny location. You need to be able to be willing to put them somewhere in your yard. And if you want more information than that, if you emailed me, at the info@wardsnursery.com or just go to the website.
It's a little harder to find. Now, I've got straw and hay bales in the barn, and some of them are bound with wire, and some of them are bound with twine. So if you could find it bound with wire, it's going to be a lot easier to deal with because the twine's going to rot.
It is. Although a lot of the twines are synthetic, but still, the wire's going to hold up a lot better. Yeah, that's a good point.
Just indulge Johnny Suburbia here. What's the difference between hay and straw?
Straw is what's left over from a grain, oats or rye or wheat, and hay is grass.
Okay.
The straw is by far a much better mulch for
it's not
using
weeds.
In gardens. It doesn't have the weeds exactly, whereas the other ones would produce weeds.
The hay is going to have all sorts of grass seeds in it. The straw is going to have just a few seeds from whatever it was.
Hay is only used to feed animals. It's not used for horticulture.
No, and I really do like straw because when that breaks down, it creates a black humus, really, really rich soil underneath it. So
it's good to know.
But yeah, I would say if I had a choice, I'd go with the straw.
All right, over to Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Gus. Now, I'm not a master gardener, but I would imagine that the last couple of days were perfect days to plant snow peas. Anyways, I do have a question.
All right.
With the various colored mulches that they sell, I was wondering if the stain or whatever you use for coloring, does that leach into the soil and can it affect the plant growth?
All right.
It's certainly not anything I have ever come across or read.
I don't think there's any concern there. It's just an aesthetic thing, I think, predominantly.
Although if you were using it around a food crop, I think I would
use it around a food crop.
I
think what's just as
mulch
concerning is the wood they're using that is dyed is usually not necessarily wood that's sort of fresh from some mill. It can often be sort of recycled wood. So
it's pallets.
Sometimes a lot of times
pallets. Don't know what it is.
Pallets.
You just don't know
what
it is.
There's a difference between bark mulch.
There is a difference.
And mulch that's wood. There's a big difference.
It's sort of like we talked about straw and hay. Yeah. One of them is the real bark mulch. When it breaks down, it does so much more better enrichment for the soil.
Because wood actually takes nutrient. It takes nitrogen out of the soil when it breaks down. It requires it to break down, and a lot of those dyed are as you said.
If they're specific wood, so it's a cedar mulch, but it's dyed red or it's dyed black, then now it's all cedar in there. And that, you know, that's just something to keep in mind.
All right, yep. Kerry, thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show here on Vox Pop. And Eric in New Windsor. Eric.
Hi. I have a privet hedge that was extremely overgrown. I did a lot of selective pruning, and it just didn't come out as well as I should. I'd like it to look like a nice hedge again. What do I do?
The good news is that you can do something called rejuvenation pruning with that. And in the springtime, close to where we are now, but not quite, when you start to see those buds swell, we were talking about that earlier, you can significantly cut that back, maybe a couple of feet to the ground or kind of thing. And I don't know how tall your hedge is or how low you need to get that, but you can do a pretty heavy cut at that point. And if it's dead wood, you know, of course, take it out. But otherwise, it should reflush and let you be able to create much better structure.
Would you also take some of the older wood right down to the ground?
I probably would, like, yeah.
Take some of the older, gnarlier stuff out.
I mean, I've had a client years ago that she had an old overgrown privet hedge, and I did a rejuvenation pruning, but it was a lot of old wood. So she said, rejuvenate it, or if it dies, I don't care.
Yeah.
I literally cut that thing to literally about an inch to the ground, the whole thing.
It came back as
a brand new hedge for her. So yeah.
I would recommend leaving some.
I like to leave a little just in case.
And then if it's a nice sunny spot, it should come back and look pretty good by June.
All right, yep. Eric, thank you so much. 800-348-2551. All right, Philip in Amsterdam. Philip.
Hi. You guys answered my question mostly about the Lannis oaks.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a big huge oak tree, and I'd like something to look at and tell how soon it's going to fall through my house.
I'm sorry?
I think he's looking for an arborist.
You're looking for an arborist?
So you go to that website.
You can go to the Landis website. There's a link to Trees Are Good. And if you go to Trees Are Good on there, not only do you get great pruning diagrams, you also get a link to all the certified arborists. And you can search them by zip code so you can find them in your area and so forth and so on. If you have any troubles with that, I'm not too far from you, so definitely give me a call and I could get you steered in the right direction. Or I should say an email.
I also might want to put my tree in your contest.
Oh, there you go.
Well, you know what?
You've got to wait till April 1st, though, right?
Got to wait till April 1st to send in that form. We're not going to post a form up probably till like the day before. Because otherwise you're going to get people try to send them ahead of time.
Yeah.
But if it does qualify... In other words, if it's big enough for us to come out, there's no charge, and I will be the guy coming. I am a certified arborist, and if I do come to measure your tree, you get a free consult.
Oh, well, how? Nice. How do you like that?
So that's why I say when you said before you're hurting them, I said, no, actually, you're probably going to help some trees because, you know me, if I see a giant tree, there's no way I'm not going to tell the owner what it needs to help keep that thing growing. So you get a free consult if I come to your home. The only way I come to your home is you have something in contention for a record breaker.
And by the way, to all of our listeners, we have links to Landis Arboretum and to Fadigan's and Ward's Nursery right on the Vox Pop page for this show. So you can click on the link and head to any of those websites and find out more stuff for your project. Dorcas in Olive Bridge, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, about 15 years ago, I put in 4 pawpaws in my garden because I didn't want them eaten by the deer. And they have done their thing, and they have all gotten at least 15 feet tall. But they put out little saplings, which are also growing like crazy. They're taking over the only garden I've got. I want to move them. When do I move them? How much dirt do I have to take up to move them? Have you ever had a pawpaw?
Oh, I absolutely. Yeah. We have them at Landis Arboretum.
Yeah,
we like pawpaws.
Oh, they're like heaven. I have fruit this year for the first time.
Yeah, really cool. Real cool tree. They do better if you plant them next to a mama. It's a really bad tree joke.
Hey, ba-dum-pa.
Anyways, back to your question there. Sorry about that. Yes, you could transplant them pretty readily spring before growth.
Are we transplanting the little ones or the big ones?
The little ones, she was saying.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to take them all out of the garden because they just keep putting out babies.
So you want to take out the 15-footers too?
I'd like to. I've got a whole front yard. The ash all got done in. And what I was thinking was I'd get a backhoe and put in a big trench, and clean the barn, and put that in the trench. And then whatever dirt I needed, I give them dirt and just totally transplant.
Well, the big ones are going to be trickier. And
but it's doable.
It's doable. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's companies that actually specialize in moving really big trees, much bigger than that. But with a backhoe, you certainly can move them. You want to try to make sure that the grade is the best important thing on a big one is, I would say, go as large as you can with the root ball, manageable. It doesn't have to be super deep because most of the tree's feeder roots are only about 12 to 15 inches under the ground. But they're wide, way beyond the canopy spread, which obviously you're not going to be able to dig a ball that big on there. But as big as you can go. And just match the grade. In other words, the grade at which it's planted at right now, when you replant it, I see a lot of times people make mistakes. The replant, now they're like 6 inches, 8 inches deeper than they were.
Recognize and, with something that's been in the ground 15 years, your percentage, they may not all survive. That's a long time for them.
The little ones would be easy.
Little ones are easy, yeah.
And to do it, the timing should be probably as soon as the snow melts. So it's probably going to be a couple weeks from now, but somewhere between in the month of April before the buds break. Yeah.
And as soon as the ground is obviously
got to be done before they leaf out.
Yeah, if they leaf out, you have to wait till fall.
Okay, because usually what I get is I get blossoms, and then we get a cold snap, and I don't get flowers because there's nobody to pollinate because it's too cold. Sure. But last year, for some unknown reason, I had the flowers, and I actually got the fruit. And it was like heaven. I haven't had it in years.
That's great.
And then once you transplant them, you're going to want to water that all in really well. And unless we get an inch of rain a week, you'd want to water them weekly right through the summer.
All right. Well, Dorcas, we have to take a break here. It is the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia and Bob Graves and yours truly, Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551. And we'll be right back.
Comes from Capital Roots, working to make fresh, healthy, and local food accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Fresh, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams, offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts presenting The Other Son. A young Israeli discovers he was switched at birth with the son of a Palestinian family. March 19th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai. 518-584-8730 for reservations. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment. 518-459-2638.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, also Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. And Greg, what's happening over at Ward's?
Well, it is March Madness at Ward's Nursery as well.
Oh, really?
Just so you know, that happens.
Isn't
every
that a
year.
Trademark? Have you run that by your legal department?
Thanks, Ray.
Sorry I brought it up.
But anyway, we do have several free classes, lectures, whatever you want to call them. Still several to go. Briefly, I'll just read a few titles. Native and non-native shrubs and trees for the garden. If you're just wondering how to go about finding some fun, interesting stuff. Principles of pruning, always a good one.
Yeah.
And ideal timing. Designing an easy care garden, you can't beat that one. That's pretty amazing. Jenna O'Brien is the lecturer there. And then Shady Characters in the Garden with Ron Kielski.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's
how long would the average lecture be time-wise?
So they take an hour. They're all either on Saturday, a couple are on Sundays in the next couple of weeks. If you go to the website wardsnursery.com, it will tell you all the details, but they're basically Saturdays 10 and 1 or 2 o'clock and then a couple on Sundays
nice.
In the afternoon.
Well, that's great. And Bob Graves, what's happening at Fadigan's?
Well, similar. We have another number of upcoming seminars at fadigans.com. You can get the list to be on perennials, on hydrangeas, on lawn care, pruning, things of that sort. And they're all listed on the website.
All right, fantastic. And again, if you guys listening forget the websites. Just go to WAMC.org/VoxPop, and we have links to Greg and Bob and Fred, and you can find out more there. All right, a couple of quick emails, and then back to the phones. And this one is from Josh, who says, can I move raspberry bushes from my woods into my yard? Will they survive the move? Also, I have very sandy soil. Do they do okay in sandy soil?
The answer to that is you can definitely move raspberries from wild parts of your property into a more cultivated spot. And every time I've ever done that, they do really, really good.
Yeah.
The black caps,
yeah,
those things take off when you plant them in your yard.
And sandy soil is always good with rare exceptions, because that's nice, well-drained soil. You should amend it, work in lots of organic matter, and then plant them out.
Mm. We would recommend trimming them back before he picks them up out of the ground, right? Cut them back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be easier to handle them.
Yep.
And if you leave, as we just mentioned, if you leave, two or three feet of that live wood, just the canes, they should still bloom.
Don't take them down to the ground, but don't leave them 4 or 5 feet long either.
All right, this one came in from Robert. I used a bulldozer to peel the entire fertile layer off my lawn to temporarily use that area for something else. This material sat in a pile for a few years. I'm ready to spread it back. Is it now dead due to being in a 7-foot tall pile undisturbed for a few years? What should I do to make this work? And that's from Robert.
No, it should be fine.
It should be fine.
Actually, be better.
Yeah.
All that grass is probably composted in. And,
yep. It's probably going to have a higher level of organic matter for sure.
So I think that'd be great.
Just spread it out.
Just if you're going to spread it, the only thing of it, a bit of advice would be if it's really wet, don't mess with the soil. Wet soils, you can destroy.
Let it dry.
Structure, soil.
So spread it out and dry it, or
no? Just wait till you have sort of a workable soil without a lot of water soak.
Okay.
A little moisture is fine, but just not wet.
Fair enough.
Will destroy structure.
Back to the phones we go, and Carolyn in Poughkeepsie. Carolyn, you're on.
Hi, guys. This is so good. You know, the Cooperative Extension in Dutchess County doesn't have much money anymore, so their Master Gardeners program is very limited in terms of answering questions. So this is a big help. My question is about rhubarb, my mom's rhubarb patch. I've been trying to rejuvenate. It didn't get thinned probably since at least 2011. And I want to make sure that I can help it. I'm going to take down some scrap trees that have been shading it too much. And I want to know what I can do other than the manure that I put in last fall to give it a little boost. And the stalks were very thin and very depleted. And it's a pretty good-sized patch, but we didn't get much last year at all. It really wasn't worth picking.
So what happens is it gets congested. It gets old. There's probably a lot of old rhubarb root in there that is now dead and kind of punky. So it's up to you. It depends. If the entire thing is looking pretty weak, I would go ahead and dig all of that up, pull through all of the roots so you find all the firm ones, the ones that are showing the eyes or the little sprouts, and then and then re-amend that soil with the materials you were talking about, and in the same spot. You can certainly do it there. You could certainly move it to another spot, whatever works best for you. Make sure it's nice and sunny. And then replant, and you don't put them too deep. They're a fairly shallow thing. What happens when you do that is you don't necessarily get a crop this year. It's going to rejuvenate. It will be next year before it starts to look good again. It really does depend on how big the pieces are, how many shoots are coming out of them. Those big kind of firm ones are obviously going to give you a few stalks. The smaller ones will take a couple years.
Okay, so the crowns that are there, the ones that are firm, I can split and replant?
When you take the whole thing up, it will be easy to sort of split themselves.
Okay, so you recommend that I dig up each one, because there are probably about 12 crowns at least.
If they're not performing well, if every crown seems to be diminished, the stalks, the stems that are, the leaves that are coming out are small, very small stalks, then yes, dig them all up.
All right,
Carolyn. Okay, this was from shade and not being split.
Sure.
Yep.
All right, Carolyn, thank you so much.
Good.
Over to Ronald in Skodak. Ronald, you're on.
My question is, what do you do after rhododendron have been defoliated by deer?
You leave them alone, and they come back. Easy enough.
How far? How deep do you cut them?
You actually don't do anything. Just leave it alone.
The deer did the cutting for you.
The deer cut it all up for you, but it will guaranteed come back.
Okay.
They ate it this winter. They ate it this winter, right?
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah. Good news, though.
It'll come back. Yeah, I've seen, like, there's been, we have a rhododendron collection at the Landis Arboretum, and we have to fence it for deer, and I've seen them infiltrate our fencing. And every single leaf, not one there. Unless they couldn't reach it, and everyone, every time that's ever happened, has always come back.
And they're very they're aggressive. Rhododendron, once established, are pretty aggressive. They can sprout pretty easily. Maybe some nutrient, load, some kind of fertilizer this year would certainly push them a little stronger. But if they're big and established, not necessary.
All right, over to Madeline in Kingston. Madeline, you're on.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have a young multi-trunk birch tree. I think it's one of those river birch trees.
Yep.
And it's growing many, many, many twigs and branches towards the center. And I was thinking that I would, prune those. Is there a problem with doing that now?
You know, summer pruning is better for birch because it's a bleeder species. In other words, it's like a maple tree. If you cut it, it's going to ooze sap like a maple tree would in the spring. And although it's not going to probably significantly hurt your tree, it's recommended that you just wait till summer. So when I say summer, we're talking end of June would be optimal time for that.
For small dead wood, because they
dead
do
wood anytime.
Yeah, and any of that could come out now.
Okay. My other question is that they planted it too close to the foundation, so it's about 10 feet away, and I know eventually the branch is going to come right into the building. So is it okay to just prune partway down the branch as opposed to right to the trunk?
Well, you don't want to leave stubs. When I say stubs, you're just cutting back to a random point. You want to cut back to a lateral either branch or a lateral bud, or the point of origin from which it grew, the trunk. And by looking at where the direction of the growth, and you're going to see that when it sprouts out, look for something that's growing in a direction that you want, and then you could cut back to that branch, and in which case it's going to continue to grow in the direction you want, as opposed to cutting back to something that's pointing back towards the house, in which case the new growth goes back towards the house.
Oh, you make a point. Yeah,
and,
all right.
And birch trees, tend to self-limb anyway. Yeah. So the branches at the bottom die out over time, and you would remove them, at allowing the trunk to be exposed. So that is sort of the natural look. It's an aesthetically better
look. It also
looks
really nice on the river birch to expose some of that trunk.
It does. The bark is one of the best features of the tree, probably.
We are joined today by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. It's The Gardening Show on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. And Mike in East Greenbush. Mike, you're on.
Good afternoon. Hey, 4 or 5 years ago, I had a severe case of blight to my tomato plants. Does that leave a virus in your soil? It seems like ever since then I've had diminishing returns in my garden.
So 4 or 5 years ago, there was, I'm a little rusty, early blight was occurring, which is, I think downy mildew, which was a pretty severe thing. It kind of took your tomatoes right out. And if you remove all of the tomato pieces, including the fruit, then theoretically it should not winter over in your garden. And if
it's a fungus, not a virus.
And it's a fungus, not a virus. And if you're rotating the crops, then you should have gotten through to a clean area.
There are also some organic fungicides that you can put on, but they have to be done preventatively.
Right.
And there are organics that you can use, and it will help that quite a bit. That actually came up from the south, I think, in some strange wind patterns, because it was all over.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
It was a sort of a black stem, a little bit of white on the leaves sometimes, and the entire plant died fairly immediately. So if your tomatoes are simply just being a little wimpy, that could be just a fertility issue in the soil, could be a light issue, could be just a temperature issue or a temperature fluctuation issue. So if you're getting green plants through the summer with some fruit, then it's not the blight. It's some other things.
Well, thanks, Mike. And we had a late blight, too. Not too
we did have a late blight.
Yeah, late blight happens every year. Yep. It's annoying.
Weather related.
But tolerable.
All right. And over to, let's see here. Let's go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim.
Yay, Ray.
Hello.
Yes, I was wondering on the giant oak hunt, would you consider it's a white sycamore tree, and it's a little over 8 feet in diameter. I measured the circumference of it one time, and divided by pi and all. and it was a little over 8 feet in diameter. It's over in Sunderland, Mass., right off of the Route 116 that passes through the center of town just north of Amherst. It's down on the little side street right at the traffic light there, the one traffic light in the middle of town.
Yeah, or if you wanted to email me the measurements of that tree, rough measurements, I'll tell you how that compares to the state champion. And if it's state champion status, I'm always interested in new state champions.
Oh, this is exciting.
So,
would Jim get a trophy?
I'm not. Well, he gets a certificate from the state, so he would get something no matter what if it's a state.
But
champion.
It's not on his property.
But in terms of the
it's
Oak
not
Con,
on my property. It's on right along the town sidewalk and Sound Street.
If it's you could nominate it on public land. You could nominate it on somebody else's land as long as you have permission to go on their land.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We are asking the nominators to actually come up with the permission to go on.
They have a plaque out there, a bronze plaque that's saying that tree was there when the first white settlers came into that valley.
If you want to email me, Fred at landisarboretum.org, photos, any measurements that you can give me. The circumference measurement is the most important one at 4.5 feet up from the ground.
4.5 feet up. All right, Jim, thank you so much. 800-348-2551. All right, to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I had a question about my peach tree. I'm just hoping that it will bloom this year. It did not bloom. It bloomed, but something happened, and I remember hearing something on the radio about a problem with fruit trees, and my peach tree did not give me what it usually yielded me, and I was very sad. I'm hoping that I'll have peaches this year. Mm. Also, I would like to suggest something about composting. I am a major composter, and what I do with my compost, which is all vegetables and coffee grinds and everything, I put it in my pot, and I put water in it and boil it and use it to feed my indoor plants. I grow jade plants.
It's called compost tea.
Believe.
Compost
tea. It's a
tea.
Great idea. I was thinking of putting Miracle-Gro out of business, but it would take a lot more.
Yeah, I think you could call it Abigail's compost tea.
Abigail's compost tea.
Yeah.
Hey, that's great stuff.
It's fantastic. It's unbelievable. I just love doing it. And, you know, nothing goes to waste.
No. It's probably delicious, too, right?
What?
It's probably delicious tea as well, right?
Well, I don't know about that. No, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't suggest drinking it, but it does the plants.
In answer to your question about the peach trees, last year it was that it got warm and then got cold and we lost flowers on fruit trees. We don't know yet this year.
That's what happened. What do you think about this year?
You don't know. It's too early to tell.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
The early warmth and then we got cold was early enough that it wasn't with the buds weren't out.
Yeah.
So you're okay so far. This just helped make a slower spring start, which actually is better for plants. If it continues like this, you're in good shape.
All right, let's go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, hello.
How are you doing? I have some red onions about the size of a baseball or a little smaller, and they got sprouts on them. They're about 5 inches tall. Well, do I have to sit them in water to let them grow more?
Don't you want to just eat them? I mean,
no, we don't want to try to plant them.
I had them
since October.
I think it's a little large to plant them unless you're looking for a basketball size one this year.
Oh, that would be cool.
It would be pretty amazing, which I've never seen. So that onion you described is really that's it. That's the one to eat. And you this year to grow onions, you can plant tiny little seedlings or tiny little starts. The onions that are about the size of the end of your thumb, you know, and then they'll grow into baseball size ones.
Now, wait a minute. If Chuck plants those large onions, he could get a basketball size onion. Is this what you're telling me?
It could also flower.
Oh, this would be amazing.
I don't think it's worth the effort.
I don't think you would get a basketball size onion either.
Because I mean, that would be one for the website.
It's also stretching the genetic possibilities.
I don't know what excites you, the basketball or the onion.
Yeah.
Well, it is March Madness after all.
Well, that's a good point.
All right, now listen. This is for the email from Linda. I need to pot daylilies to sell. What is the best potting mixture and food?
Well, they'll grow. What's great about daylilies, great about daylilies is that they'll kind of grow in anything. So once you start potting them up, it really doesn't matter. But if you want them to be, you know, have good leaf color, send up some flowers, then, you know, some kind of potting soil.
Right. Not topsoil.
Yeah, ideally. Not topsoil.
It could be a rich garden soil. You'll probably have a few weeds in there, but potting soil usually comes pretty clean.
Yeah.
And then you would add on a regular basis Abigail's compost tea to fertilize them, or some other general purpose fertilizer. We've often mentioned things like plant tone could be worked into the pot
right.
So that you don't have to worry about adding it every time you water.
All right, we are done. This was a good one, and now we're back to our monthly shows, right?
Yep. Yeah,
all right, so Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia, thank you guys for being here. Support comes from Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products, and gifts. Waterwheelvillage.com. Interim Healthcare, celebrating 46 years of in-home care, supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy and its quarter century of conservation in the Capital Region, interimhealthcare.com. Ed Garbosik, certified financial planner, private financial design, South Hadley, your life, your plan, your portfolio, privatefinancialdesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC, and Dance Flurry, presenting Albany Shindig tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at First Congregational Church, Albany, Celtic concert and dancing with live fiddle and pipes, an alcohol-free event, danceflurry.org. Thanks again to Fred, Bob, and Greg for being here. Thanks to you for calling and for the great questions today. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, wow, the week has flown by. You throw a blizzard in, the week really flies by. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Right now, though, stand by for news.